Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. I'm Andrew Mellon. I'm a professional organizer, the author of Unstuff Your Life, Kick the Clutter Habit, and Completely Organize Your Life for Good, published by Penguin, and available at Amazon and everywhere that books are sold. And I'll be your host for the remaining 2 weeks of June on Sunday mornings, right here at 10 a.m. As the most organized man in America, I help individuals and companies to get and stay organized and simplify their lives in the case of businesses, their working environments, and operations. You can find more information about me and my company, Virgoman Incorporated, on the web at www.virgoman, that's V-I-R-G-O-M, as in Mary, A-N, in Nancy, .com. There you'll find plenty of tips, tools, and resources to help you get organized once and for all. We've got a great show in store for you this morning, but before we get to our guest, let's take a few moments for some housekeeping. This show is brought to you by Rare Bird Radio, a division of Rare Bird Lit, the brainchild of founder Tyson Cornell. Rare Bird Lit is a Los Angeles-based literary PR, marketing, and events firm that specializes in maximizing all efforts of book promotions. You can find them on the web at www.rarebirdlit.com. We thank them for sharing the vision behind Unstuff Your Life and its message of liberation from stuff, and for this opportunity to share that message with listeners everywhere. If at any time during the broadcast you'd like to join in the conversation, and I certainly hope that you will, you can either text us your questions on the show's homepage or call in. The number is also listed on your screen, but here it is as well, 626-414-3413. Now remember, there are no stupid questions, so if you have a question for me or for our guest this morning, give us a call. I certainly hope if you haven't already that you'll pick up a copy of Unstuff Your Life and read it. Our previous guests have spoken of its usefulness and applications, and this morning's guest was also intimately involved in its development. But before I introduce her, I want to share with you or remind you of a fundamental concept that I've developed that informs all of the work I do with people in the classroom, in homes and offices, and at public events. It's quite simple and yet so powerful that it alone will transform your relationship with stuff, and that's my organizational triangle. As a triangle, it has three legs, and those legs are one home for everything, like with like, and something in, something out. Now, before you start to panic about the last one, something in, something out, let me tell you about the first two, one home for everything and like with like. One home for everything means exactly that, that everything has one home and only one home. That home is not universal, meaning the home for my keys or cell phone or wallet, etc., is not necessarily the same home for your keys or cell phone or wallet. But each of our keys or cell phone or wallet has a home that is distinct. And so the keys are either always in their home or in your hand being used to unlock something. It is that simple. And just by applying that, you will discover that you will always be able to find something within 30 seconds. No lie, consistently. One home for everything. Anything is in your hand in 30 seconds or less. Like with like just means that all similar items live together. So all of the office supplies live together, all of the cleaning supplies live together, all of the dishes, the linens, your clothes, etc. If you want to know exactly how much of anything you actually have in your home or office, bring it all together with its brothers and sisters, and the results will quite possibly amaze you. You may finally discover that you really do have 7 staplers or 9 pairs of scissors or maybe 14 umbrellas, and then you might remember that you don't live in Seattle anymore. You now live in a desert. So 14 umbrellas might be more than you actually need in your new domicile. Something in, something out, as I said, is all about achieving stuff equilibrium. Now, I don't have a particular agenda around what stuff equilibrium looks like for anyone, for you or for anyone, really. I say have enough of everything that serves you and nothing that doesn't. That bears repeating. Have enough of everything that serves you and nothing that doesn't. So if in your home you have room for 100 pairs of shoes in your closet, then you should have 100 pairs of shoes in your closet. There's nothing wrong with having 100 pairs of shoes. There's nothing intrinsically wrong with having 100 pairs of shoes. Now, if you live in a studio apartment and you are trying to live in a 400-square-foot apartment, you might not have room for 100 pairs of shoes, but still there's nothing wrong with having them. If having that many shoes is a value of yours, then perhaps you'll have less room for books or for a sofa, but you could still have the shoes. You just want to be making mindful choices about the amount of things you have given the amount of space that you have. So regardless of the amount of space you have, if what you've determined is 100 pairs of shoes is enough shoes for you, when you buy that 101st pair, it must be because one of the first 100 pairs are now ready to be retired. I've mentioned this organization the last few weeks on air, and I'm going to mention them again because I'm just so excited to know about a company that helps people to get rid of shoes. I mean, shoes are often, when I'm working with clients, shoes are one of the major sticking points of what do you do with them. You don't want to throw them in the trash. If they're worn out in any way, you feel a little bad about giving them to the Goodwill or someplace where they're going to be used again. So there's a great organization for the recycling of shoes, and it's called Soles for Souls. The first sole is like the soles of your shoes, and the second one is like your spiritual inners. And you can find them on the web at www.soulsforsouls.org, and that's spelled S-O-L-E-S, the number 4, and then S-O-U-L-S.org. They are a great place to pass along footwear. They're a national organization. There are drop-off places throughout the country, and they're also open to working with you to set up one in your local community if you don't already have a drop-off place. So please check them out. And now I'd like to introduce our guest this morning. I've known our guest for a long time. She was actually one of my high school teachers, and we've been friends ever since. She's a remarkable woman. She's been an educator, obviously. She's an author. And she's also one of a core group of people who read and offered me excellent feedback as I was creating Unstuff Your Life. So I'm delighted this morning to welcome Nancy Stern to Blog Talk Radio. Good morning, Nancy.
Hi, Andrew.
How are you? How are you this morning? I know it's early in California.
It's early in California. I'm great, but I'm here. I've had a little coffee, and let's jump in.
That's excellent. Great. Well, I'm just delighted to introduce you to everybody here. I mean, as I said, the work that you did with me on Unstuff Your Life as one of the core readers was really invaluable. I mean, your feedback was quite astute and practical and usable, and it really informed a lot of the choices that I made as I was developing the book. So thank you again for that.
Well, you're welcome, and it was my pleasure. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed being part of the inner circle as well.
Great, great. Why don't you tell the listening audience a little bit about yourself?
Well,
the work that you're currently doing. I mean, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. I live in California. I used to teach high school, as Andrew mentioned earlier. I was the theater teacher, and I also taught public speaking and interpersonal communication in Michigan, and then I moved out to California, changed my life up a little bit, and developed a company where I go into other companies and teach communication and presentation skills. I also speak professionally at conferences and events on the topic of how to get more out of your life by being a better communicator. And I've been doing that now for over 25 years. And love it.
Great.
So
great. Why don't you share your tagline with everybody, since it's such a great line?
Okay. Thanks. Thanks. A little shameless press here. How you say what you say matters is what my tagline is for my business. How you say what you say matters, because I really believe that. Most of us did not have any kind of education growing up in how to interact with another human being, and then we get into the business world or get into relationships and have families and find ourselves going, huh? What? What was that? How are we supposed to do that? And we need to realize that how we say things has an impact on meaning, and meaning is what communication is all about. Hello? Did we get cut off? Hello? No way. Hello?
I think Andrew got dropped.
Oh, no. Are we still on the air?
Yeah, we're still on.
All right. So, I'll just keep talking, and maybe he'll come back online with us.
Yeah, I'll keep a lookout for him. But
okay, So for those of you listening, there's always technical problems, and we have to deal with those whether we're online or on the phone or anywhere else, especially in interpersonal communications. We're going to have technical problems.
Here we
go. And in this situation, I think, Andrew, are you back with us?
I am. I'm so sorry about that. That is the miracle of mobile communication in the United States today.
Right. So I was just telling the listening audience that we always have technical problems to deal with, whether they're like this kind of a technical problem or they're an interpersonal technical problem with not understanding one another. So
yes,
there we go.
Okay. I'll listen to the tape afterwards and see if I've missed anything particularly cogent that I can use in my own work and catch up. But I'm glad to be back.
I think I've taught you a lot of that over the years. A lot of the stuff you've learned and are using. So I'm very proud of that.
Well, that's great. Thanks. So you live in California. How big is your home?
My home's about 1,200 square feet, two-story townhome with a small yard, about three bedrooms. I've got a small galley kitchen, a one-car garage, and one-and-a-half bathrooms.
And do you work from home? Do you have an office?
I do. I have a home office. I actually spend more time in my home office than I do anywhere else in the house. When I'm designing programs, creating visual aids to go with my programs, or just marketing and doing business online, I'm here in the office. Then I'll leave and go to clients, or I will travel, which I do a fair amount of.
Yeah. And now, as I know, I mean, the listening audience doesn't know, but I know you're pretty organized. So it's not like the book was a welcome tool in the sense that you weren't waiting for something. I mean, unlike our guest last week who talked about the book really informing some major shifts in how they arrange their homes, their offices, things like that. I know that you, and having been a guest in your home, I know that you're highly organized. But you did share with me that both in your kitchen and in your garage, some of the tools and suggestions in the books did help you inform some choices.
Absolutely.
You made there. Do you also have to believe?
Yeah, absolutely. When I was reading the book as one of the people seeing it before it was published, I got to the chapter on the garage, and I've lived in my place about 12 years, and I had never done anything with the garage. I just, you know, boxes come from Amazon or other places, and I throw the box in the garage, and then boxes started piling up, and other things started piling up, and I have a row of shelves along one wall of the garage. And it's a small garage. It's a one-car garage. So, you know, and I have a Camry, so it's pretty tight getting the car in there, and I like to keep the car in there because of the salt air in California. So after reading the chapter on the garage, I thought, well, you know, it is time for me to do something about the garage. I can barely get myself in there, let alone anything else. And it was during the summertime, and one of the neighbor kids had posted a sign at the mailboxes saying that he was looking for summer work. And I said, you know what, I'm going to hire this kid. So I hired this young man who I think at the time was 9 or 10 years old, and he had a big red wagon. And we took the wagon is important. That's foreshadowing of the story because I don't live near the trash cans. So he brought his big red wagon over, and we pulled everything out of the garage. We followed all of your instructions, went through the whole book. Most of what was in there was, you know, stuff that I really was just throwing in there because I was too lazy to walk to the trash bins. And so the whole something in, something out thing wasn't working for me. And I really wasn't even aware of that notion until I'd read the book. And so I started pitching out all these cardboard boxes and getting rid of everything that was meaningless in the garage. And then we cleaned off all the shelves and started to put things back and kept everything nice and organized. And that's pretty much where we are right now. And that was, you know, a few years ago when that was going on. As far as the kitchen is concerned, you want to stay on the garage for a moment?
I just wanted to say, so you cleaned out the garage, which is excellent. I mean, it's always excellent when anybody does that. But the success of being able to, several years later, still maintain it, that, you know, even as snug as the garage is, I mean, the car is able to park in there, which is exactly, I mean, that is the car's home. So it's great that
right.
action was working. And that by applying the principles of something in, something out, you've actually been able to maintain the garage in a way that works for you, and it hasn't reverted back to its old former ways.
No. And actually now when a box comes from Amazon, I hear you in my head saying, do you need this box? You really don't need this box. What's this box going to serve? What kind of purpose is this box going to serve? No, really, you should walk this box out to the trash can right now.
Excellent.
And,
so that's,
and that's what
I'll,
I do.
That's great. I just want to offer folks that one of the things that I teach people is that every task has a beginning and an end, and that an example that I often use is doing the laundry. And that when you do the laundry, the end of doing the laundry is not a basket of clean clothes on your bedroom floor, but when the laundry has all been put away into its cupboards or its dressers, its closets, and the basket's back on the dryer ready for some more clean clothes to be put into it. So it's the same thing. I mean, it's that principle in life. When the arrival of the package into your home is not the end of the process. You know, opening up the box from Amazon or from wherever, from, you know, Zappos or wherever you've been shopping, is not the end of the process. It's two-thirds of the way through the process. But then finishing up and getting rid of the shipping materials, the cartons, those kinds of things, that's the end of the process, so that you're
absolutely
back to where you were.
Yeah,
we have a caller on the phone, so I'd like to bring the caller on.
Okay, great.
So, and then we'll continue. We'll head back into your kitchen. So we'll call her from the 91910 area code. Hello. Good morning.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can.
This is Micah.
Oh my God.
I'm actually having to listen to the show on my phone. So I've got my phone on speaker because I had some technical problems. So I was a little surprised that you tapped in here, but here I am. And I have a question that might be a little bit unrelated. It's not about garages or, you know, getting packages, but it's about how to get rid of the feeling of nostalgia. And I'm talking about my art studio, which, you know, I have a lot of things that I could potentially use in an art project one day. And although it is somewhat organized and it's getting more organized by the day, I have some trouble with the nostalgia piece of you know, how to get rid of things, how to let go.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about that. Now, when you talk about nostalgia, is it that when you accumulated these objects, and are we talking about like objects? When you talk about art supplies, are you talking about like paints and actual things that you would purchase?
No,
or these
because
are, like,
I do collage. Because I do collage, they could be any kind of objects. You know, they could be a piece of fabric. They could be a piece of metal that I found on the ground that looks like something.
Right.
A shape
okay.
of something.
Right. And so what? Talk to me just a little bit about what the nostalgic attachment is. Like, what is that? For the listeners, I'll say that I often talk about the stuff behind, the stuff itself. Stuff itself is obviously, has no narrative attached to it. It's just an object. So it's the stuff behind the stuff that we bring to our possessions, our belongings, that is where all of the, sort of all of the frisson, all of the tension, all of the drama exists. That's the narrative that we attach to these objects, because obviously when we leave the planet, however that happens, the object remains, and it has no history in and of itself. The fact that it belonged to your grandmother, or the fact that you found it on a hiking trip in northern Michigan, or, you know, that you received it from a former boyfriend or girlfriend, none of that is intrinsic to the object itself, and whoever picks it up after you is not going to know that. So it's key when you're looking at the objects, to be able to recognize what you're bringing to the object versus the object itself. You know, what's intrinsic to the object versus what the narrative is that you're attaching. So, with you, Micah, and the stuff that you're talking about, just share with me some of the what you consider to be nostalgia around this stuff, and then we can drill down into that.
Well, it is what you're saying. You know, it's where did I find it? What was I doing when I found it? But then I always have this link to the future. Like, could I use this in a piece? Could I use this in a box that I'm making? You know, oh, it has the shape of a butterfly, and I like to make things with butterfly images, but it's a piece of rusted metal. So that's where it. That's where I get stuck.
Well, so of all of the, I mean, the, I guess I'm wondering, partly, is it that you don't have enough room for all of these things, or just you do have enough room, but they're just poorly organized, and if you had them better organized, you wouldn't be struggling with whether to let them go or not?
Well, I don't have a lot of room. I don't have a lot of room for all of these things. Probably the organization piece is key, because I, you know, just yesterday I was putting some like with like, and that already, you know, gave me an extra drawer to put other things in. So maybe organization is the key first, and then the second step would be to actually get rid of some of the objects.
Certainly in the journey, that's exactly what I would say. I mean, the first thing to do is to sort like with like, assign everything a home, so that in your studio you're going to have an area for, two-dimensional found objects versus three-dimensional found objects versus, you know, papers or building supplies or tools, so that when things have distinct homes and then they are clustered together like with like, the volume of what you're trying to store will become crystal clear for you. So then you'll be able to see, okay, well, I've maxed out this drawer. So a drawer is probably not the right container for these kinds of objects, because there's too many of them to fit in the drawer. So they need a tub or a container versus these objects, which will all fit into a drawer neatly and easily. So a drawer will now be the right home for those kinds of things. You know, is that making sense?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
I think I should probably invest in some more. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I was going to say, once you've done all of that, then you can start to look at the actual volume of things that you own, and you can say, okay, I have, you know, 9,000 of these kinds of found objects. Realistically, if I were to not do anything else in my life except make art, I still wouldn't use all of these. So of the 9,000 of them, these are the 3,000 most interesting to me that I am most likely to use. I mean, again, once the like-with-like sorting has happened, you can start to drill down into the piles of them and recognize, okay, this was cool. I remember picking it up off the street as I was walking, you know. But of all the things that I could be using, this one is less likely to be used. And remember that every day that you're alive, you'll be finding more and bringing it home. So it's part of that something in, something out. That what I often encourage artists and craftspeople to do is part of getting organized is opening up free time for the things that matter. And in your case, like in other artists and artisans' lives, it's actually creating the artwork, so that it's not, you're not in a constant place of accumulation and potential, but you're actually doing the work as well. And I'm not suggesting that you aren't, but you follow me that a lot of the time, one of the places people are stuck is that they're all in the pre-assembly stage. It's all of the accumulation. It's not, they don't feel like they have adequate time to actually make anything, so they're always just constantly preparing to make something but never actually doing it.
That's a very good point. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. So I'm going to suggest that you try some of these suggestions, and then either call us back in a couple of weeks or send us an email and let us know how that's working. And then we can see if you need some more help, or if it's actually unlocked something for you and shifted something in a way that works.
Sounds good. Thanks. I will do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Micah. Thanks for the call.
Take care.
You too.
Bye.
And for everybody who's listening, and just as it happens, both Nancy and I know Micah. Again, Micah and I attended high school together, so it's an extra special treat that Micah was listening in and called in. Nancy,
yes.
Back to the kitchen. We talked about the garage. This was a great call from Micah, and now in the kitchen as well. Why don't you tell the listeners what your kitchen was like? And actually, before we do that, let me just remind everybody, you're listening to Blog Talk Radio. This is Andrew Mellon. I'm the author of Unstuff Your Life, Kick the Clutter Habit, and Completely Organize Your Life for Good. The old title used to be Completely Transform Your Life for Good, but we did one organization to be out there front and center. So the title of the book is Unstuff Your Life, Kick the Clutter Habit, and Completely Organize Your Life for Good. Our guest this morning is Nancy Stern, who is an educator and a coach and trainer. And Nancy was telling us earlier about applying the principles in Unstuff Your Life to her garage, and now we're going to talk about her kitchen counters as well.
Well, as I was reading and I tackled the garage, the chapter on the kitchen came up. And, you know, like I said, I have a very small galley kitchen, and on the counter on one side is the coffee pot. On the other side of the stove from the coffee pot is the microwave. And then along the other side of the counter, I had all kinds of stuff. I can't even remember what all was there, but there was very little counter space. I know I had a George Foreman grill. I had a toaster oven. I had a blender and vitamins and just all kinds of things. And there really wasn't, like I said, a lot of counter space. So I went in and I looked at everything, and I said, what do I really need to have out on the counter? And I did not need to have the George Foreman grill out. I did not need to have the blender out. The toaster oven was kind of a big thing, and I used it a lot, so I left that out. And I took away everything that was superfluous and wound up having counter space, and it was really quite lovely. Last year I also had my house painted, so that was an opportunity to go into cabinets and get rid of things in the kitchen. And I was able to discard, I don't know, Tupperware that was 25 years old and the lids didn't work and, you know, things of that nature that were in the cupboards or in the drawers. And I lightened the load, essentially, is what I'm saying. And the book was inspiring to help me to do that.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, so often, again, when I'm, whether I'm teaching or I'm working one-on-one with individual clients, it's always, everybody is always amazed. I mean, I'm less amazed because I've been doing this work for so long, but people are always amazed at the volume, the sheer volume. And I think even Micah will discover, as she shared with us a little bit on her call, that when you start to group like with like, it becomes crystal clear just the amount of stuff that you have, and you can really start to make informed choices about whether of all of the things that you could be storing in closets and cupboards and drawers and cabinets, is this important enough for me to take up prime real estate with this object? Even to bury it in the back of a cupboard if there's room for the George Foreman grill or the blender or some odd Tupperware containers that don't have a corresponding lid or the bottom has melted, you know, in some ways. And it's out of sight, out of mind, so that stuff ends up getting shoved or shuttled to the back of the cupboard, but it's taking up valuable space, and some people do, unfortunately, but if you're being mindful, you would never just leave a pile of garbage in the middle of your living room floor. You would recognize, oh, this is underfoot, and I want to be able to walk through the living room unencumbered, so this stuff needs to go into the recycling bin, or it needs to get shredded, or something needs to happen with it. This is clearly not where it belongs. But I think behind closed doors, it's so easy to just put something there and not even think, I'll get to this later or someday. It's just, I just don't want to make the decision, and that is definitely the end of that that task is, and it's clearly a truncated process. There's no arc to the beginning and the end of a task there. It's just,
I don't want to deal with it now. I'm going to deal with it. I don't know when. I just don't want to deal with it. So I'm just going to shove it someplace. And it's when space is limited, again, whether you live in an 8,000-square-foot house or a 12,000, you know, a 1,200-square-foot townhome, the space is what you have, and you want it to. You want to be able to find what you want to find when you want to find it. You don't want to have to hunt through a bunch of things that don't serve you to get to the stuff that does.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you were telling me before we went live this morning, you were telling me about a client of yours and her experience with the book and some of her challenges. So let's talk a little bit about that. And I think that
sure.
I think that there's some stuff there for us to go into.
I have a client that I was working with to help her improve her public speaking, and in the conversation we discovered that one of the things that she also wanted to do was to grow her business a little bit, and I've been in business for 25 years, so I started talking to her about possibilities and networking opportunities and, you know, things of that nature, and I said, well, let's get organized first. Let's go to your office. And we went downstairs to her office, and she's a yoga instructor, and we went downstairs to her office that she shares with her husband, who's an artist and woodworker, and he's not home a lot, and I went in, and it was really disorganized. And we started to chat, and I said, well, one of the first things you have to do is to get rid of stuff so you can make room for new things to come in. You know, if you want to bring new things into your life or new things into your world, you have to let go of things. That's just something that I've always believed on. And you have to make space. And so there was a need to make space. And we started to organize, and I told her about your book, and she went out and she got it, and she was reading it, and we started working through things. And I was trying to help her use some of the strategies in the book, most importantly, like with like, everything has a home and something in, something out, the three key points that I find to be really helpful. And she began to tell me how it made her feel to think about doing this, and she started to hyperventilate, and she was getting really stressed. And then she began talking about things that are going on a deeper level with her family and her mother, and how stuff like this was related to her life growing up. And, you know, I started thinking, boy, this is the stuff that Andrew works with. And I recommended that she just go in baby steps and she just take a little bit at a time. And then she told me that she'd already done this one time before, and she kept it going for a while, but then she got frustrated and she just let it go. So there are people out there that really can benefit from your work. The thing is, if they're not really self-motivated, they need to have some kind of a way to get there, you know, some help along the way. So that
right.
was my story with her. I think that, you know, she was so overwhelmed. So I guess the question maybe for your listeners would be, what kind of advice do you have to offer to someone who is so overwhelmed with stuff and with the process of organization that they stop because it's just too much?
Right. And this speaks to not only our first guests on the show several weeks ago who created that private Facebook club that they've been working with, but also a class that I've been teaching for the last several weeks at the Open Center in New York. And this is something that I recognize more and more as I'm doing this work out in communities, is that having some sort of peer support system so that you're not isolated in the vacuum of your own thinking, where I don't want to say where the problem lives, but I do sort of want to say where the problem lives without it being pejorative or some sort of judgment, because it's understandable that if you are struggling with clutter or disorganization, that it's possible that your own thinking is part of the problem, which doesn't mean it can't be fixed. It doesn't mean that it's somehow irrevocable or that you're wrong or broken because you know your thinking is a little faulty when it comes to making decisions around stuff. Because again, it comes back as you're sharing the story about your yoga teacher to the stuff behind the stuff. It's so infrequently the actual stuff itself. It's so much the thinking and the feeling around stuff where people are getting stuck. And so with the class that I'm teaching right now, there's about 30 students in this class. We're spending 4 weeks working together. And I've really encouraged them to consider themselves to be a cohort where they can support each other. I have a community forum on my website. Again, that's www.virgoman.com. And on that community forum, people can create conversations. They're called discussions on the website. So you can create a discussion. You can pose a question out to the general community. You can get some support on issues or questions that you're struggling with. I am a frequent visitor, so I will often chime in and offer guidance or suggestions or tips, solutions as I see the answers based on questions or queries that people are posting. But it's a great way to break that isolation, because so often I think when people are struggling on their own, they just turn back to themselves, and if they didn't have the answer before they asked the question, it's unlikely that without some sort of external intervention, whether that's just a conversation with a friend or reading a book or leaving the room and then coming back into it to clean your perspective, you're still going to have the same thoughts and feelings that you had when you posed the question in the first place. So most importantly, I think, is find a clutter buddy, find somebody that you can turn to who will be supportive and encouraging. Use a timer so that you don't set yourself up to tackle what appears to be an insurmountable challenge in one sitting. You didn't create this disorganization or clutter over one sitting. You're certainly not going to resolve it in one sitting. As you suggested, baby steps is a great way to go. You can't allow your feelings to inform your measurement of success, because even if you got rid of one shopping bag or one garbage bag full of stuff, you might not recognize that something has shifted, but intellectually you will know things have left my house or they've left my office. There is less here. I can't really see it. It's a forest for the trees kind of thing. Because it's all of your stuff, you can't see that you've made a dent, but you have made a dent. And it's a friend or a colleague or a stranger on a chat room who can remind you you have made progress. So it's over and over again. It's where I'm headed, I think, in this work that I'm doing with people, is encouraging them to form coalitions, cohorts, communities where they can support each other. Everybody has some challenge around stuff, and being able to turn to somebody else and get some support and break that isolation, I think, is key to making it. When the next time I'm in the neighborhood, I'd love to be able to meet with this person and have a consultation with them and see if I can help them jumpstart it. But for all of those folks that I can't get to immediately, really find somebody else that you can turn to who will be supportive and not encourage you to, you don't want a gloomy Gus kind of person who's going to just say to you, oh, yeah, I know, it's impossible. You'll never change. It's impossible to do anything about this. It's just our sad lot in life that we have to live surrounded by clutter and disorganization and never get to the things that really matter to us. It's such a pervasive misconception and a lie. So,
great. I'll pass that along to her. I've done what I can do for her, but I've noticed that she has stopped making appointments with me because she doesn't want to deal with it. So
right.
There's other stuff going on here as well.
Yeah, no doubt. As you mentioned, I mean, I'm sure there's family of origin stuff So I mean, if you can reach out to her one last time and just say, maybe maybe making some sort of consistent commitment to another. You know, that's the thing. It's the accountability piece that when you break out of that vacuum of your own thinking and you actually you make a commitment, like I will do, even if, again, if it's 5 minutes or 10 minutes a day, it doesn't need to be I will spend 3 hours a day working on this. If you don't have the 3 hours, it doesn't mean that you can't do anything. Set a timer for 10 minutes, work on it, and then send a friend an email or pick up the phone and call them and say, the timer just went off, I did my 10 minutes, I don't feel like anything's changed, so remind me that something has. And you can get the kind of support that you need to be able to start to shift things.
Right. Another thing that I thought your listeners might be interested in, and I think some of this came out of the book. I don't know if you had it in this. I can't remember if you had it in the book exactly this way or not. But when talking about closets, when I had my house painted last summer, I had the opportunity to tackle some things in my closets, although my closets are pretty well organized. I've got one in the bedroom and then one in the guest room. And the one in the bedroom houses most of my clothing. The one in the guest room houses things for my work, but also some clothing. And the one in the bedroom is the primary closet, obviously, and because I live in California, the weather is generally pretty lovely, and I have a variety of different uniforms that I wear when I'm working at home, and then I have the uniform when I go to work out with clients. And so because I spend more time at home prepping for the events that I do with clients, I like to be comfortable and casual, and I have some tank tops and some sweatshirts and some things like that that are of a variety of different colors, and there are a few colors that stand out. So when I go to do the laundry, I'm always looking for hangers to hang things up on. And what I started doing after I read the book was I organized all of the tank tops that I had in their colors. So if I had 3 blacks, they were together. If I had a couple of yellow ones or teal-colored ones or whatever the color was, I was hanging them together. And then as I take one off the hanger, what I used to do is just pull it off the hanger and put it on my body. But now I take the hanger out of the closet, I take the top off of it, then I put the hanger at the front of the line so that when I go to do the laundry, I've got 5-6 hangers all together. And I don't have to go hunting through the closet to get the hangers so when they come out of the dryer, I can hang them up. And I don't know if that was in the book or not, but it's a nifty little trick to stay organized. Sure. And to be able to find hangers.
It is a great tip, and I didn't. I don't have that in the book. What I do is I do something similar. I only have one closet in my apartment for clothes. Well, I have a coat closet, so the coats are there. But for clothes, what I actually do is I pull the hanger out when the shirt comes off. When the shirt comes off the hanger and I put it on my body, that hanger actually comes out, and I just drop it in my laundry basket so that when I go down to do the laundry, they're all together and ready to go.
Right.
So
either way.
A similar thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, either way, it's you know, the same kind of a technique, but it's helpful to be able to have them all there.
Yeah, exactly. And it speaks to just the efficiency of doing the laundry, which is often a tedious task that people don't necessarily – I mean, I happen to enjoy doing the wash, but, you know, a lot of people don't. So, again, make it as easy for yourself as it can be. Have all of your tools ready and available so that you can spend the least amount of time doing it as possible. The quicker and more efficiently you can do the wash, the quicker you can get onto something else. And that's something that I want to remind everybody about again this morning, is I don't believe that getting organized and staying organized is a hobby or should be a lifelong pursuit, in the sense that once you get organized and you achieve stuffed equilibrium for yourself, you've broken that cycle of accumulation, so that the focus of your time is no longer on stuff, But now you have, again, enough of everything that serves you and nothing that doesn't. So your time is available for those things that really matter to you. Instead of spending your time, I'm not anti-capitalism. I'm not anti-shopping. I think that when you need something, it's great to be able to go to a store and get what you need, whether that's an office supply or it's more garments or it's groceries, whatever it is, tools, yard stuff, gardening stuff. It's wonderful that those things are available and we can go get them and you don't have to go out in the backyard and cut down a tree and make yourself a rake. I think it's wonderful that you can go to a hardware store and buy a rake. But you probably don't need 9 rakes since you only have 2 hands and you can only wield 1 rake at a time. So depending on how many people in your house actually garden, that's perhaps the maximum number of rakes that you would need to have. And so the point I'm getting to is that when you get to stuff equilibrium, all of this time opens up for you in front of you, that the things that you've been deferring, the things that you say are important to you that you don't ever seem to have the time for, suddenly you do have the time for them. And that's the sweet spot. That's where I want people to get to. I don't want you up at 2:00 in the morning reconciling your checkbook or arranging all of your shoes in your closet so that they're all matching. That should already be done, and it should be easy to maintain. If you have enough of everything and you don't have too much of anything, everything's in its home, and so it's easy to get beyond it. Instead of, so often people are afraid that, once I start this, I have to do it for the rest of my life. It's maintaining the system is really simple once everything has been assigned a home and like is with like. It's at that point it's pretty rote. And again, your life opens up in front of you, and that really is where I want people to travel to. I don't want you to be constantly replacing things and still in that endless loop of accumulation and purging and accumulating and purging. It's just whether you believe in reincarnation or however you think about the amount of time that we're here on this planet, at least in this form, it's a finite chunk of time. And if you're going to spend it here, how much nicer it would be for you to be able to spend it doing things that really feed your spirit and feed your heart and engage all of you, as opposed to being trapped in these exercises of managing stuff. It just, as you can tell, it's something that I'm very passionate about, and I feel like there's so much potential for people to kick this habit and get to the other side, and it doesn't take a lot. It really doesn't. So that's what I want to say about that.
Yeah, something else that I think can be helpful to people is, and I know this has always been helpful to me, is the notion of staying present and being in the moment. And, when you are in that situation where you're looking at something and going, God, I really would like to have that. And then to just stop and say, do I really need to have that? And sometimes, I know I found myself in this situation, I go, no, I really don't need that. I have a client who's in the office products industry, and I'm an office products junkie, as you might remember or might know. And I think that comes from my days as being an educator. I remember in second grade, I used to stop at the end of the school year with my teacher, Miss Nichols, and bring home school supplies and have a little school down the basement. And I've always been fascinated by office products. I know it's a little weird, but when I found this client, or this client actually found me from my website, she told me what business she was in. I went crazy, and she said, well, go online, go shopping, see what you need. I'll send you some stuff. And so there's a certain kind of pen that I'd like. And she sent me 2 boxes of these pens probably 10 years ago, and I'm still using them. And if you were to come in my house, you'd say, well, why do you have 10 of these and 20 of those and 30 of these? And I go, because they were given to me. But I would have bought them in the past because I would have found them on sale. Oh, there's 12 pens. I need them all. But I've learned that I really don't need all those pens, and they just take up space. And now I'm dwindling them down over the years, and I'm not replacing them because I don't need them. And I think that's I think, I don't know if that's an age thing, an organizational thing, a looking at life differently thing, but for me, it's a question that I often ask when I'm shopping. Do I need this? Or is this just something I might want?
Right. I think that that's an important question to ask yourself. And it's, again, I just think that there are so many other ways to derive pleasure in the world and to feel connected and participating in the world that getting it from stuff just feels to be one of the thinner ways that are available to us. So that, you know, when you're looking at something and thinking, do I need this, you can possibly fool yourself into thinking that, well, I do. But again, of all the things that you could spend your money on, of all the things that you could spend your time on, if you really take just a moment and pause and reflect and ask yourself those questions, the answer will become clear, like, yes, I do really need a new pair of shoes, or yes, I really do need a new winter jacket, or no, I really don't need this, I really like it. And in those cases, I think it's good to say, well, okay, so if I don't get it today and I think about it over the next week, this is one of those great things, is that a week seems so short in some ways, but after 7 days, often people can't even remember what it was. It'll be like, oh, yeah, it was a nice sweater. They're onto something else at that point. So it's great to be able to just pause before you pull out your credit card or some cash or a check and just check in with yourself. Like, of all of the things that I could be doing right now, how important is acquiring this object? So.
Yeah.
Well, that's
cool. Exactly.
Well, it's been wonderful talking with you this morning, Nancy. Is there anything, any last words that you'd like to share with the listening audience?
Well, just that to remember the triangle. That's the most important thing. Stay present, remember the triangle, and take baby steps. That's what I think works for a lot of people. And, you know, it's good stuff. This is a great book. It's funny. If you haven't read it, you need to read it. It's funny, you know. Andrew gets right in your face and doesn't take any of your excuses. So I recommend it, and it's been great chatting with you as well.
Thanks, Nancy. So I'm just going to remind everybody, the triangle that Nancy's referring to is my organizational triangle, and the three legs of that triangle are one home for everything, like with like, and something in, something out, so that you can achieve stuff equilibrium. Thanks, Nancy, for joining us this morning. I'm Andrew Mellon. Thank you. This has been Blog Talk Radio, and I hope you'll join us again next Sunday at 10 o'clock. For all the dads listening, happy Father's Day, and we'll talk again soon.
You on a debris. That's a Sunday morning market. You were starting through the odds and ends. You was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door. That old familiar love song. Gosh, you knew you'd find me waiting there at the top of the stairs. And you tried to tell me. at the depot with the General Workers Union. And yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight, and they're not working. Done without me.